When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor here at Cinema Blend and co-host of the Real Blend podcast. And I am back to introduce a new episode, but not to say to you guys that we're not going to have a full episode of Real Blend this week. We will. We're going to get together and record tomorrow. But as I mentioned last week when I had to do one of these little introductions, is that we had a lot of really great interview opportunities. And so this one today is going to be a bonus episode that you guys just get additionally because we've had so many cool people to talk to. Ludvig Göransson is the composer for specifically, most recently, Christopher Nolan's film Tenet. But his credits up until this point, even though he's a very young composer, have been astronomical. He worked with Ryan Coogler on the Creed franchise and followed him over to Black Panther. He has done the music for The Mandalorian and is now collaborating with Christopher Nolan. And so you know that he's a great fit for the Real Blend podcast. We were able to work out through his reps a chance to get him on the show, and we have a fantastic conversation about his process, working in reverse with music, bringing a recognizable theme to the Marvel Cinematic Universe for both Wakanda and Black Panther, and we talk a little bit about the Rocky theme song. So, without further ado, a bonus episode of Real Blend this week, in addition to our full show, it is our interview with Tenet composer Ludvig Göransson.
Here we roll.
All right. Well, first of all, Ludvig, thank you so much for joining our show. This is an absolute honor to have you on. I've now seen Tenet 11 times. I've listened to your vinyl a lot. I think it's an incredible score, one of the greatest scores I've heard in a long time. But for our audience, I wanted to kind of go through your journey. Obviously, working with Coogler, meeting Coogler in school, and kind of your journey to Nolan, and just kind of the working relationship that you have with Ryan Coogler, and kind of like what how different it was with Christopher Nolan. Two very different filmmakers, obviously. You've known Ryan for a longer time. So I just wondered if you could talk about that journey and that relationship you have with both.
Well, I'll start with Ryan Coogler because that's the kind of the beginning of my professional career, which started about 2007 when I met him at USC. He was actually one of my first American friends. I just moved here from Sweden and I just bumped into him randomly at my dorm. I was staying in on like this fraternity street at USC. I had no idea what a fraternity was, but this fraternity got thrown out from, it was called Phi Psi. They got thrown out because they had too many like crazy drug parties. So this year was only open for grad students. So I moved in there somehow. And as soon as I moved in there, I felt like I was a part of like a American Pie movie. Like just looking like all the girls were living on the other side of the streets on the sorority houses and all the guys, everyone looked the same. Everyone was like walking around outside my window with these like red styrofoam cups. And I've only seen that in movies before, but meanwhile I was like in my little room like with headphones trying to like write music, and like everyone's like partying like, bro, what's up? But not that much party for me, because that year in school, in grad school, was it was great, but it was also pretty hard, like hardcore in like terms of like how much we had to do. But one of my first friends that I bumped into was Ryan Coogler, and we played pool together, and we just started talking about films and music, and he started mentioning like he started talking to me about Swedish artists, because I told him I'm from Sweden, and he was like asking me about like all these Swedish artists like Robin, Lykke Li, Little Dragon, and I was just surprised that he knew about all these Swedish artists, And then we started talking about film, and a couple of months later, he like called me and asked me if I wanted to score his little short film called Locks. And and it was interesting because we had had, we had a class together by a professor. His name is Kenny Hall. And he was a music editor working in the business for like 50 plus years. So he's been working with John Williams. I think he was a music editor on E.T., so he was like John Williams. He was also like Jerry Goldsmith's main music editor. And had a class which was really unique for USC and really important, which was the class that put directors and composers in a room together, looking at film, talking about sound and music, which was pretty unusual. And it was so great because that class really made Ryan aware of how important it is with music, but mostly sound. Like a lot of the conversations was just about sound. And Ryan's first short didn't have any dialogues. It was just sound and music. So already from like our first collaboration, Ryan told me how, you know, we talked about how sound was important, how we incorporate sound into music and how really work with those two elements together, because that's one of the main points that was taught to us by Kenny Hall, was taught to us by Kenny Hall. So from that beginning to, you know, the next short film, his 508 film, his first feature, which came right out of school, Freeville Station.
Oh, masterpiece.
And we, through all those projects, we worked on like incorporating sound design in the score. So like for Freeville Station, we incorporated music from the BART train station in the score. And then moving on to Creed, we incorporated music from like the gym and the boxing gym and like the jump ropes. And like I took elements from that, incorporating that in the music, in the score, made beats out of that. And then our next movie, which was Black Panther, which was like a completely different journey, but it very much, you know, it's all projects and films that are completely different from each other, but, you know, they still have the same, you know, the same creator. So we're just, you know, even though we're working on this $200 million movie, it's still, we're still so excited and we're still in the same space that we, you know, it still feels sometimes like we're students sitting in a little dorm working on a little student film together.
Wow. And then to Nolan, a very different collaboration, I would imagine. What are those differences?
Yeah. And then to Nolan. And it's funny because I think I remember Coogler telling me that Christopher Nolan came to I think it was the Creed premiere, like the first screening of Creed, and Chris told him how much he liked the music, and like Ryan just started like talking about me for like 10 minutes, you know. And so I think that's the first time maybe that Chris heard my music in a film, and he just, I mean, for me it felt like out of the blue, but he reached out to me about, you know, this was 2 years ago, to just meet. And I really had no idea what it's about, but, you know, Chris Nolan is one of he's one of everyone's favorite director. You know, he's the way he's influenced film, and he's like such a, he is such a master creator, you know, of new IP and like new ideas and like new inventions. And it's like the way he's reforming film and the way music works in his films is incredible. I mean, if you're a composer and if you're into music, you know, you definitely paid attention to his films.
Yeah.
And being, you know, they've had a tremendous impact in my career. Like when I saw Batman Begins, it was the first Chris Nolan film I saw in a theater, and like that impact of that film, because it was like one of the first times I had an experience in a theater where like the music, almost like I was like on a live concert. The music is so much of a character of itself, and you're sitting there, and like the way that also Chris understands the mixing and music and how he puts it in the mix, it's like it's such a upfront feeling, so you can feel it in your chest, you can feel it in your whole body, almost like you're on a live concert. So
it's like Zimmer will do those live performances, you know,
if yeah, exactly. Zimmer's live Zimmer performance. Live. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And what they did together with film and music just kind of changed the whole way of making cinema for the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years.
Yeah. Remarkable.
Wow.
So obviously when he calls and wants to meet, I was like, I'm there in a split second. And, so we met up, I went home to him and we had a little meeting, or we actually had a long meeting, which lasted for like, first meeting lasted for like 6-7 hours. And we just ended up talking and listening to music. He was playing me a bunch of music that inspired him through his career, and I played him some music that inspired me, and we're drinking a lot of tea and listening to music, and just had a great time. And he ended the meeting by like asking me if I wanted to come back to the day after and read the script for his new film.
Wait, Ludwig, how does that work? Is it like an iPad shuffle? Are you guys on YouTube? Are you pulling records off the wall? How does it work? Nolan must have a record player, I assume.
Yeah, it's mostly CDs and okay. vinyls.
Okay.
So he has a great CD collection, and also like he knows so much about film, obviously, but also so much about film music. So it was almost like I was getting like a little film music class as well, because there's a lot of things that I missed out on that he knows, and I think we also pulled up some stuff on YouTube at one point, but mostly CDs and vinyl.
That's awesome.
Wow. Ludwig, I want to narrow in on Tenet for a second. It's a movie that one of the things we've talked about on this podcast is how much better it gets every time you watch it. I think I've seen it maybe 6 or 7 times. Mm-hmm. Kevin's seen it about 600 or 700 times. And you know, one of the narratives that came out of Tenet is that it is a complicated film, and it is difficult to understand. You really have, I mean, Robert Pattinson has made jokes about how he didn't entirely understand it. I'm curious as to how your initial understanding of it was. Like, did you get it entirely? And how does your ability to understand the film affect your ability to be able to score it?
Yeah, I mean, I started out reading the script before I saw it. Mm-hmm. So even from the get-go, like, it took me a little bit of longer time to read it, because there were some parts that were a little bit complicated to read on the paper. That was actually easier to see in the movie. Like for example, some of the action scenes like that, sure. That's easier. It was actually easier for me to watch in the film. But but when I read a script, I feel like what's important for me is kind of the environments. And also, I remember reading, like, the, remember reading the script. It was like a big, you know, it was like extremely ecstatic. And I was sitting in a room in an office and just by myself. I had the script in front of me, and I just remember finishing it and just reading that last couple lines, which is like Robert Pattinson's voiceover in the end. It was like, oh God, extremely moved how beautiful it was. And that was kind of the feeling that I took away from it. And also another thing I took away from it was just the hugeness of the film, like how many locations they're at. Like a lot of, because when I read a script, I started hearing like a lot of the sounds and where there aren't like all the, like the windmills, for example, or like the wind energy farm, like that, those places, the fire engine scene, like fire truck sounds and alarms. And like, I don't know, I get a lot of input from just reading about the space and the locations. But I don't think, you know, I definitely didn't like understand exactly what was going on at points, but I didn't feel like I needed to either.
Kevin jokes all the time. He says, like, you don't have to understand it, you just have to feel it. Kind of.
That's it. Well, that's the one. Yeah. She tells you how to watch the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I would like to zero in on the track Posterity, which is a little over 12 minutes long. I think, is that the longest film track that you have released?
Possibly, yeah. That sounds about right.
I'm curious about like what dictates the length of a track? Like a film track, when we look at soundtracks, they 3 minutes, 4 minutes, often driven by a scene. When you get a 12-minute, you know, bit of sequence, and even the way that Nolan sort of uses moments of Posterity, you hear it throughout the film. Is it something that you hand over to him and allow him to choose where it goes, or and what dictates the length of something like that?
Yeah, I mean, so I like to get to work as soon as possible. So as soon as I read the script, I've started to work. Like I'm starting out with ideas, and Chris was also very adamant of that's how he likes to work as well. Like that's why he gets his composers really involved at a very early stage. He's finished the script. He sends it over to his composer. you start reading it, you start having conversation, because that's also at the time when you have time, you can spend some time with the director, because when he or she is shooting the film, like, there's, if you get a phone call once a month, you're lucky, you know, they're so busy when they're shooting the film. They're thousands of decisions to make every hour. And then after they shoot the film, like, the process of editing is also, you know, it's you're in a different mindset. But when the director is prepping for their film, that's when they're, you know, that's, they're prepping for the, they're prepping for the location, the production design, the costumes. Why not start with the music there as well? You know, because you're building a universe, and that's, you know, especially what Chris is doing with his films. Like, he's creating his own DNA. He's creating his own universe. And so we started building our own musical universe like 6 months before they started shooting. So every week I would be in my studio, just write music based off our conversations, based off the script. And then every other week I would go to his office and we would tracks like over and over and over again, dissect them every sound by sound, and dissect the melodies that Chris likes and the melodies that he gravitates to, the ideas that he thinks could be more elaborate and the things that doesn't work, and take those ideas further and further and develop them. So some of these cues and some of these songs you hear in the film are actually, some of them are written before they start shooting. Like for one of the cases, the Rainy Night in Tallinn, which opens the whole film, that the prologue, like, Chris kind of, that was the first scene we had to finish, because I don't know if you guys remember, but they released that scene before Star Wars. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yeah.
So, you know, a couple of months into our collaboration, Chris was like, okay, well, now I want you to start writing an action piece. He told me about the scene. I read the script too, and he told me how it starts, you know, with the tuning of the orchestra, and then something, like, he basically has the idea of the arrangement, even though he doesn't have any music, but he's communicating in a very, very great way where I understand where it needs to go. So I wrote like a 5-minute piece of music. I sent it to him. We worked on it for 2 more months, and then I didn't hear from him until he took off the shoot, and then I didn't hear from him for a while because they were traveling around the world. But I remember getting a letter from Tallinn where he was like saying that they were about to shoot the scene, and he's been listening to my track, I think he also said it was like raining in Tallinn, and it's like when he was writing this email or letter. He was like, the one thing I want to change in this track is like maybe 3 minutes in, the terrorists are coming. So like, what if we make it the synths, the arpeggios a little bit more distorted there? And so I remember going back to my studio I changed the name on the track to like Rain Night in Tallinn. I did that little change, and I didn't think more of it until like 3 months later when they went back in LA and started editing that scene. And he basically just put my track, I don't know what I was going to see, but he basically put that track on that first edit. And I saw it, and it was like, I blew my mind, because it almost felt like he had filmed the whole sequence to my music.
Wow.
That piece of score blows my mind. Like I told you, I've seen the film 11 times. I will literally go upstairs in my house, and that part, it's at 2 minutes and 49 seconds when the bass drops. It's like boom, 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 boom. And I love the guitar and the bass element of it. It's just so incredible. And I love that he used some of your score in the trailers as well, which is amazing. You don't really see that a lot. I want to ask you about, and this is probably a question you've probably gotten, but I'm actually interested in how it works from a process perspective. I know that a lot of the filming was done backwards. A lot of the actors were actually fighting backwards, blinking backwards, speaking backwards. And I believe you wrote some of the music and it was played backwards. Can you, correct me if I'm wrong, but how is that even done? Like, do you write it backwards, or do they just reverse the notes? Is it rewound? Can you talk about that process of having music backwards?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously one of the first thing I got from the script, the theme of inversion, and how big part of it plays in the movie. And like inverting music is something that people done for hundreds of years. Like Bach did it in his compositions. You write something on the paper. It's like you write it from top to bottom, and then you play it from bottom up, and it's the same piece of music. And that's something I remember studying a little bit in high school. You know, it's how you can just write a melody, a 12 note melody, and then have it be the same from backwards and forwards. So I knew it's like, okay, well that'll be fun to kind of get back to the theory books and like start writing a little bit of music like that. But the thing is, when there's a lot of different ways to invert music, but that way of inverting music, the listener, the audience, they're not going to experience it sounding backwards.
Right. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
So how do you make the audience experience and hear it sound, experience it like it's sounding backwards? And the only way to do that is to reverse it digitally or in the computer. So, and now today it's so easy. You can just take a music program, I press one button and it reverses the audio. But if depending on what sound it is, it's going to sound different. Most likely it's going to sound different backwards than what it did forwards. And so how can you take a sound? What kind of sound do you take to make it sound exactly the same forwards and backwards? So basically that all depends on the attack of the sound. Like if I say something like ba, or like a rim shot, or like a big drum hit, that has a very hard attack. So if you play that backwards, it's going to sound like something is, it's going to sound reversed, but it's not going to sound the same thing as if it's played forwards. But if I have a sound like a slowly, if it's a note like, if the attack is the same as the end, a fade in, fade out, and I reverse it, it's going to sound the same. And one of the ideas that came out early from Chris and from our conversations was that I was talking, because we were listening to something on a CD player, and I was looking at a CD player, and I was like, talking about how one of the first times I ever composed, or I felt like I was producing music, was when I was like 7 or 8 years old, and I was at the house, I was home, and I was playing with my parents' audio system and the radio, and I was sitting with the volume knob and like turning it up and down, you know, and I was talking about how that kind of movement in music and movement in how you can listen to music today is kind of gone, because there's no knobs, volume knobs like that anymore. Like kids only have up and down on, you have to press the button, right? Multiple times.
Right, right.
And that was basically the origin for Neil's theme.
Yeah.
Because his music and his theme is chords played on and then manipulated through a volume filter up and down. Like it's almost like waves coming up and down. So it plays, depending on its movement in the timeline, you can play this forwards and backwards. And it will sound the same. There's a bunch of stuff like that throughout the whole score. The most challenging part, I would say, is the whole scene that's called the red room, blue room scene, where it's one of my favorite scenes, and I have a lot of favorite scenes, but it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie because it's so beautiful. The colors are so beautiful. Mm. It's also such an incredibly difficult executed thing to do as an actor, because they had to also to learn their lines backwards. The way you see it from the two different perspectives is something I've never experienced before watching a screen. And so basically what the music is just doing the exactly the same thing as the camera and the actors and the story. So it's the same piece of music played backwards first, and then the second half plays forwards.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh man, that's amazing.
That's unbelievable. Ludwig, I'm a big Star Wars fan, so I would be remiss if I didn't try to squeeze in a question about The Mandalorian. I guess just as someone who, I literally wake up. I have to be at work at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I will wake up at 3:30 in the morning to make sure that I can see the episode so that I don't have it spoiled for me. Because they are, Disney Plus, they're so secretive about all the plot points and when certain mm-hmm. things are going to happen, and all of our minds were blown when Luke Skywalker showed up. But as someone who has to compose the music for the show, how are you, like, are you given all the plot points and told it? How are you presented with the storyline so you know if the music fits? And I guess specifically, like, when did you find out about the Luke Skywalker moment in order to be able to properly compose that?
John Favreau gave me a heads up, like, pretty early in season two about it. He was like, you know, and the way that he does it is, you know, he's so smart. Because he's really good at keeping secrets, you know.
Even from that, you,
even from me. But he is. I knew about it, and I knew about the reveal of the baby in season one, which why it worked so well was that because John was able to keep it a secret. You know, it was a surprise for everyone that saw it.
Yeah,
and. Same thing with Luke, you know, and it's just he knows the importance of surprise elements, especially in today's world. Like, nothing is a surprise. So it was just something that he kept very tight to, like, just the closest collaborators. And, like, whenever I worked with it, we had it, you know, everything was, like, blurred out and it was black screened. But he knew also the importance of me, like, of me thinking, like, knowing about this and also planning to write this music, because so I think halfway into the season he showed me, like, an early version of that. I came by and he showed me an early version of that scene, and I was, you know, very surprised, like everyone else, but it was so beautiful. But it was also really important because I needed a couple of months to kind of process it and just starting to think about what to do for that moment.
You did a great job. It was a beautiful, yeah. Beautiful work.
Ludwig, I have a very quick one, and then I would like to get your thoughts on Black Panther. One, because you worked on Creed, mm-hmm. I would love to know where you rank Bill Conti's Rocky score on the list of all-time film scores.
Oh, I mean, it's definitely top five. I haven't really done a top five of film scores, but it's definitely top five of all time. I would say after Star Wars, it's probably the second most known film's music,
right?
Yeah. I know, unless I'm wrong, right?
No, that's got to be. It has to be one of them up there for sure, 100%.
And probably for one demographic, it's even more known than Star Wars. Like for,
It's a great way to wake up in the morning too. It gets you going. Yeah. It gets your heart racing automatically. Because of recognizable theme songs. One of the things that I think the conversation that swirls around the Marvel films is that the heroes, you know, sometimes are lacking a theme, a traditional hero theme. We grew up on obviously the John Williams Superman theme and Danny Elfman's Batman and Spider-Man themes. And so when you were working on Black Panther, I'm curious, is that even something that Marvel is aware of? Is that something that they discuss as well too? Or is that fans kind of, you know, trying to attach music to specific moments and specific characters? Do you look to get like a Black Panther theme to the character?
Absolutely. I think I've worked with Ryan for a while now and that was obviously a very important thing for us to really put our own spin on this character and give this whole universe a different sound and make it sound like a different, you know, like Wakanda, you know, that we would understand that we were understanding that Wakanda is completely different from any part of the other place of the world. You know, it's a fictional place, but it's also very real because it's technically a place in Africa that was uncolonized, but also has the most technology in the world. So it was definitely in our conversations from very early on that we needed a very specific sound for this character and for this world.
Ludwig, I'll end on this because I think we have 2 minutes left. So I just wanted to say thank you for joining us because genuinely, Tenet is one of the most incredible films I've ever seen. I went and saw it in theaters and IMAX 4 times just because I wanted to get that sound and that the way the 747 scene climaxes, that dun 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 dun. I just want to know, like, when you write something like that, like the epicness of what that moment feels like in your mind, and then when you see it with that gigantic 747 that they actually purchased and really crashed, I just want to know what goes through your mind when you see your own music. I know you explained it with Rainy Night in Talon, but when you see something like that on screen, when he's shooting it in 65mm IMAX and it's full scope, 1:4:3 aspect ratio, your music's just jumping. And I, like you said earlier in the interview, that's what the beauty of Chris Nolan is that he allows the composer's music to be just as important as a leading character as anybody else on screen. So I just wanted to know what your thoughts are on watching scenes like that and hearing that just pumping through a system just knowing.
Did you see it in a theater? Did you get to see it in a theater?
Oh, I saw it. I don't know, 20 times, 30 times maybe.
Kevin!
You see it more than me! This is what's it like to hear that music to those scenes like that? Especially that, like, and just those that one bass, though, that boom! Like, yeah. That, at the beginning, it was so freaking badass. Just wanted to know what your thoughts are on just watching it and hearing it.
Thanks. No, I saw it, you know, when we started to mix the film, for the theater, we actually mix it in the theater. So every Friday we watch the film down, and we were able to see it in the theater, which is great. And actually, when we started working on this film, the way Chris works is that while he starts to edit every Friday, he invites the team over and we watch it from the top to bottom, the whole movie every Friday. So. Which is great because, like, the Monday to, you know, Saturday to Thursday, I'm at the studio and, like, I'm trying out different ideas. And then on Friday, I'm presenting it and we're watching it in the film, and then we have time to talk about it. And we did like that every Friday for I don't know, 9 months maybe or something like that. And it was such an important part of the process because being able to experience it in its whole like that is very important to kind of get a consistent sound and consistent through line. But I, like I said earlier to Kevin, like one of the fun things about this project was that there was so much music created just based on our conversations and reading the script. And the 747 track was one of the early ideas that I did just based on the script. And it was almost like he shot it to the music as well. I remember seeing it for the first time and like here and like how he edited the scene to my music. And it was like, I almost started laughing because it was like, it was so perfect and funny. It just felt like it was like a, what do you call it? Like a monster. It's like the 747 feels like a monster, right? It feels like huge, you know, King Kong or this crazy thing coming. And it's like, I don't know. I didn't have that envision when I was writing that piece of music, but it just came to life in a different way.
You tap Nolan on the arm and be like, I wrote that. that's my music.
That whole piece of music is amazing. I like how it starts off all calm as they're putting their stuff through security, like boom, 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 and then it's like, dun, dun. It's just so cool, man. Yeah,
cool, man. Yeah, but it's a really great way of working because I like that way of working. That's how I prefer, because when you start as a composer, when you start writing to picture, sometimes it's hard to write longer form of music, and you start just writing like, you know, you start like think you, the picture can sometimes hurt you, and you know that you don't write. Because there's not a lot of scenes or cuts that are longer than 30 seconds. So when you want to write long form, I kind of prefer to do it just based on a conversation or just based on the script, because then you can write longer ideas. And just like Posterity, for example, like, you know, you can write a 12 minute piece of music. And it's a long form way of writing. And I like that a lot.
Well, we got to get you out of here, Ludwig. We really appreciate you coming on the show. It's an absolute honor, and I hope you know that how much your music has meant to cinema, and your Tenet score is one of the greatest scores I've ever heard in my life, and I genuinely mean that, and I want to say thank you for your time.
I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Great talking to you guys, and keep it up.
All right, we'll have you back.
Congratulations on the second baby. Yeah. Congratulations.
All right, thanks,
and if
guys.
You ever want to do the top five score countdown, please come on our show and do it. We can all do it together.
Yeah. We'll do it together.
We would like to thank Warner Brothers for giving us time with Ludwig. Obviously, we had a lot of fun with him. Really great composer. He was joining the show to promote the fact that his score and music composed originally for Tenet is now available. There's a vinyl edition that you can collect. And if you're watching us on the YouTube channel, you saw Kevin hold it up. It's also available all different places that you can get digital music downloaded. And of course, Tenet is now available at home, specifically on a 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray and digital release too. So all the different ways that you can see Tenet, just not in the theaters anymore the way Nolan really wants you to see it, but that's okay. I'm sure most of you guys tried your best to go out and see it in that proper format. I love the fact that Ludwig talks about the fact that he saw it like every Friday while he was working on it. Just an incredible bit of information from him and made me super jealous. Okay, we'll be back with a full episode this week. We're going to have director Tim Story joining us, talking about his collaborations on the animated film Tom and Jerry, and also diving a little bit into his work on the Fantastic Four. Really great conversation about 3D animation and bringing the Warner Brothers films both to theaters and to home entertainment. So make sure you check that out here. If you're on the new YouTube channel, make sure you go down and hit subscribe, turn on your notifications, and give the Real Blend channel a follow, because every single time that we post a new video like this, it gets posted right here. You guys can be the first ones to come and watch it.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.